A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello. Before we start this episode of the MMA Fan Podcast, we need to tell you about our sponsor, Freetrain. Freetrain do these fantastic running vests for you to run in, hit the bag in, and they keep your phone close to your chest. No more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket when you run or at an awkward angle on your arm. You can keep it on your chest with easy access to your phone whenever you go training. And what can the people do, Stu, if they want to get a vest?
Simple. Head over to www.freetrain.com. Have a look, see what you like. And when you pop it in the basket, just before you check out, pop in the code MMA fan, save yourself 10%. I mean, don't ever let it be said we don't spoil you here on this podcast. www.freetrain.com. Go check them out.
Excellent stuff. Right, on with the show.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we've got another sponsor to tell you about. Phil Supreme. They're a nationally recognised brand who offer only the very highest quality of natural supplements. Their extensive range includes a range of medicinal mushrooms, nootropics, anti-aging products, gut support products, green powders, vitamins, and much more.
Yep, they've worked with fighters from all the top promotions, including UFC, Bellator, Brave, and Cage Warriors, with a solid reputation of providing results. So check them out on Instagram, which is at Phil_Supreme. Or their website, www.philsupreme.co.uk, and make sure you use the code MMAFAN for a cool 15% off your first order. Don't say we don't spoil you.
Hello, and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin. Joining me always, Blake Harrison. Hello.
Hi, mate. How's it going?
All right. Yeah, not too bad. An exciting one today.
Yes, yeah, we have. We've got a great guest on today. Our guest is kind of storming up the Bellator rankings in the women's Bellator featherweight division. If you don't know yet, you will know very soon. We've got someone on. She's only 6-1, but she's fourth ranked in the Bellator division. Her first loss was her first ever pro fight. So I really want to ask her about kind of your first fight being a loss and how you come back from that. And she's gone on this winning streak, is doing incredibly well. She's also young. I think she's only about 28, 27,
29.
20? Oh, 29. 29 years old. And she's a single parent as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think she's the first mum we've had on the podcast. We've had a few dads. Is she the first mum we've had on the podcast?
Oh, I think you might be right.
I think she is. I think she's the first mum. And not only is she a mum, but she's also, as far as I'm aware, she's a single parent as well. So just the difficulties of putting together a kind of top level sporting career and being, you know, the sole parent. I want to ask her about all of these questions
Definitely.
As well. I think she's had a really interesting life. And she's still going. I mean, she's still young. She's in her 20s, and she's got a lot going for her. Bellator think really highly of her. She's on, I think, a 6-fight win streak now, and she's getting closer and closer to the fight against the legend that is Chris Cyborg. So, God, yeah, there's lots to talk about.
Absolutely. There's just a absolute army of fighters coming out of Ireland at the moment, and I'm interested to know, you know, what that's like. You know, having Owen Roddy, you know, training you as well. You know, he's got a tried and tested path of some champs. So, yeah, lots to talk about today. Should we crack on?
Let's crack on. Let's not keep the people waiting any longer.
Give them what they want, Harrison.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is Leah, the curse, McCourt. Leah, how you doing? You're right.
Good, how are yous?
Good, thank you. All good.
Good. Well, before we get into your career and what's been happening of late, I want to take you back to kick things off, please, Leah. And if you could just tell us a little bit what it was like growing up in Ireland.
Yeah, I actually live in Belfast, the troubled part of Ireland, Northern Ireland. So I grew up in like the generation of like, you know, like this kind of guys like McCallum, Carl Frampton, and that's kind of how I got into fighting, because I always loved martial arts. I did judo as a child, and yeah, it's different, you know, when you come to Northern Ireland and experience the difference, like the history and stuff. So it's, you know, I've kind of been I've always trained and learned from all sides of the community, so it's been interesting. And and obviously Ireland is so steeped in fighting history, like, I trained in the south of Ireland as well, and it's definitely a special place to come from, and I'm very proud of it.
Did you feel like you had to be tough growing up in Belfast? Was that something that was ingrained in you? Because I think I've heard the story that, was it your dad that sent you and maybe sisters as well into judo?
Yeah.
And am I right in thinking that there were times where you weren't too fond of going to the judo classes as a kid?
Yeah, that's right. So my dad, he's actually from Liverpool, he's a Scouser, and my mum's from Belfast, so it's always going to be hard no matter what, wasn't I? And then I had a passion really young for martial arts. Like, I loved watching Bruce Lee movies and loved anything to do with martial arts. And I didn't love judo. I always wanted to learn how to strike. So that's how MMA came about. After I had my daughter Isabella, I went to like a MMA gym and I was learning like Muay Thai. And that's when the guys heard I had a background in grappling and judo. That's when they kind of made me have a fight, and I had no idea what I was doing. I just was thrown into the deep end.
Well, so I mean, because your record is 6-1, if I'm right in saying that, and your only loss is that first ever fight.
Professional,
yeah.
So I've obviously fought amateur as well, quite a lot of fights amateur, and then my professional debut I lost, and then since then have won.
Did you have any moments like after that first professional fight where you had any kind of like self-doubt or anything like that, where you went, oh god, I've gone professional and I've lost that first fight? Was there any kind of worries there at all?
Yeah, I still do every day. I'm still like, what am I doing?
But even, I mean, you're on a 6-fight win streak now. I mean, you would have thought that maybe you've gone, oh no, I'm good at this. But are you saying you still get, because it's what we're calling nowadays that imposter syndrome, isn't it? Where
this is what my coaches spoke about fight week. My whole last fight week, I honestly was like, I can't remember how am I going to know what to do when I get in there? How am I going to remember combinations? And the boys were like, Leah, this is like, they told me about this imposter syndrome, and I was like, how am I co-main event in Wembley? Like, what am I even doing? I have no idea what I'm doing. And I still get that, like those massive doubts and massive, like I do suffer really bad from nerves, and I, no matter what I always fight, I always deal with it and always like embrace it. But I definitely have those doubts and those like demons in your head saying that you shouldn't be there. But you have to just keep, it's like anything in life, like you have to keep fighting against those voices that are really loud all the time.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, but how do you do that? Like, what coping mechanisms do you have? I mean, like, I'm in the middle of doing a play at the moment, and the first like week of the run and a play, you're constantly like, do I know my lines? Oh my god, do I know what I'm doing? And you are really nervous. You're going out in front of a few hundred people to perform, and you hope you don't mess it up, and you hope you don't embarrass yourself, and all that kind of thing. But you kind of just have to do it, trust yourself, and get through it. But in my world, no one's going to punch me in the face unless I do something really stupid.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with it?
see when I'm backstage, like, warming up, that's the most, like, sometimes the most surreal place to be, when you're in this, like, dingy 4x4 room, and it's everybody, you can just sense the nerves and anxiety of the other fighters warming up, maybe going out before you, getting themselves psyched up, and we're like, we're in this tiny room and we're about to walk out for the 10,000 people, and it's not like, like we're singing or dancing, like we're actually fighting somebody in a cage. And I really have all this going in my, through my head, because, you know, like, imagine I was a singer, how much easier life would be if I was just walking out and I could sing. But no, I'm actually fighting someone in a cage in like 5 minutes.
So that whole scenario is crazy, isn't it?
It's like, there's no, see, even like the fight they said, I'm like, there's nobody in the world that you can actually describe what is going on. Like, you wake up in a hotel room with your team and everybody's like nervous and because they know it's fight day, and like walking on eggshells because you're really like snappy, and it's like you have to wait the whole day, so it's like the longest day of your life. It's like impending doom, like every hour is getting closer to that minute that you have to walk to the arena. And it's like, it's the total, and it's not like, I'm not scared of getting hurt, I'm not scared of, it's just the unknown. It's like, you don't know what, you could go in and your life could be changed for the better, and money and massive opportunities, or you could go in and be somebody's highlight reel knockout and get played on the internet for like the rest of your life. Like, and that is what makes it so exciting as well. And it makes, especially MMA fighters, I think, so special, because it's not just boxing. You can't just get knocked out. There's so many ways to win and there's so many ways to lose. And like all these 10 million thoughts in your head, trying to like center it in and focus that you're going into fight, and you do this every day. You're trained. You literally train 5 hours a day to do this. Like, it's just so much goes on. And it's like, it's hard to describe.
Just one of the other things, like in the last, you know, few fights you've had, we've definitely, you know, as a spectator, seen that there's a lot of media interest in you, Leah. And I just wonder how you found in fight week, like how it's different having media obligations to maybe some of your earlier fights, when your focus was just got to fight and make weight. And now there's the added, you know, whether it's a bonus or not, I don't know how you'd view it, but, you know, the added extra that you've now got to carry out these media obligations and do stuff like what you're doing now with us. Like, you know, how does that, is that a distraction, or how do you factor that into your mindset and process of fight week?
Yeah, I think since my amateur career, there's always been a wee bit of like a bit more, I don't know whether it's hype or attention on my fights, because obviously I'm mum, and I think people can kind of question why I love, you know, MMA and why I love fighting. And I've kind of always had to deal with that. I don't know, we bit of more eyes on whatever I'm doing, just because I think people find it interesting, because I'm relatable to some like mums and whatever. And it's definitely, yeah, whenever like some of the girls or guys I'm talking to that are on in the prelims, and they're on, and there's maybe not as many people in the arena, and I'm like, oh, like, I wish I was on early. I wish I was just getting in, getting out, and like there's not all this like attention and what's going to happen after this next fight, like blah, blah, blah. Like, I definitely do feel like there's a lot more pressure. I don't know if it's pressure, but it's the right word, but like, at stake sometimes when you're given those like main and co-main event slots, because obviously like the promotion build it up to be this, or you know, they do a lot of like work behind the scenes to promote the fighters, and it's like you're kind of, you know, there's a bigger drop if you don't do well, and it obviously there's more benefit when you do well. I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but yeah, sometimes I just think I wish I wasn't, you know, maybe having to do so much like fight week, especially when you're cutting weight. But then sometimes it's a distraction as well, whenever you can't eat and you're starving and you have to go and do things. So there's like a plus, there's like positives and negatives with it as well. But I've kind of always had to do it. Like, even I was saying to the guys, you know, like my first professional debut was like on the main card of Cage Wars. I've never had like time to develop and build my kind of experience up on, you know, in the cage. It's always been like big nights, massive shows, like big opportunities. So I've kind of got used to that aspect of it, but it doesn't make it any more easier, if you know what I mean.
And you mentioned being a mum, and I think, is your daughter Isabella?
Yeah, Isabella.
And I think you had her quite young. Were you about 17 when you had Isabella?
Yeah, I was 18 when I had
18.
Her, yeah.
And so, I mean, that's a very you're very young to have your first child there. Was that ever a scary thing, or was that ever a difficult thing in terms of like outside influences either commenting or thinking in any way negatively about that? And have you been able to take any of that as inspiration for your career in MMA?
I've always been very driven. I've had like 3 jobs since I was 14. I've always been a worker, always like earned my own money, always done everything, been so independent. But like, I have to be totally honest, like I could sit and say, like, stereotypically people have said this. My mum was like everybody's like, Leah, like you just got on with it. Like you weren't even knowing you were pregnant. You didn't even complain when you were pregnant. Like you were working 3 jobs, you did driving tests, passed your personal training qualification. Like, I don't know. I just kind of dealt with it. And it's like, that wasn't the bit, like stuff that happened later in my life. It's like, my mum was always like, this is going to be the hardest thing that ever happens to you. And it's like, the devil was like, oh really, hold my pint here, tell me other things, see how she copes with this after. Like it's just been part of me and like my story, and it's never been an issue. And I know I'm very fortunate because I have a support network that's let me do what I do and obviously achieve what I have. But I know there's a lot of mums that are in similar positions don't have that and aren't as fortunate in their circle. But I do hope that I can, apart from that, there's been 10 million other trials and things, and I just like to keep putting out the message that no matter what happens or no matter what situation you're in or what cards life deals you, you can always achieve anything. Doesn't matter what, you can always overcome it.
That in mind, Leah, do you feel a weight of responsibility as a, I guess, a role model, you know, being a mother and a Christian and a woman in this rapidly growing sport? Do you feel that weight?
I just really just try and be myself and just like
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just, we said, yeah, I don't know. I don't really feel any responsibility. Just try and be myself and do the right thing. That's it. And try and, you know, achieve things. And obviously, I believe everybody's given a purpose to glorify God. And I think this is my purpose. And I just always say, like, His will be done, like, in my life. Like, whether I go on to lose the next 20 fights or win them, like, God's plan's always better than the plan I have for my own life. So, and I trust Him. So that's, you know, I know He gives us platforms to influence people, and I just try and do that positively.
Sure.
Well, so, I mean, you mentioned, like, you are, I think, an inspiration, but not just to mums, I think to dads as well. I think to any parents out there, particularly single parents, will look at someone like yourself as as an inspiration? So, and what I wanted to know was, what are the most difficult aspects and what are the most positive aspects of being a single parent in your field, in MMA, which is such a unique, not even within the sporting world, it's quite unique, but as an athlete as well, what are the most difficult aspects and what are the most positive aspects of it?
People always talk about me being a mum, but I always say, like, I'm just the same as any other working mum. And it's just that I'm in the, you know, like, a bit more media attention or in the spotlight a bit more. Like, I always say, like my role models are the people around me. Like, my mum, she's a radiographer in the cancer centre in Belfast, like, running cancer trials. Like, my sister's a teacher for in a school with kids with learning disabilities and does so much work with children in care. And my brother-in-law and my sister works in a nursing home. Do you, like, these people, they're the people that aren't celebrated, aren't in the spotlight. They're, like, the real role models. Do you mean, like, that are doing selfless jobs every day, that are doing, are giving back to, they're working for, like, to help others every single day, like, hands on. So I always look at them and they inspire me. I can't even remember the question. What was it again?
No, I was just asking it. But firstly, I just have to say, I completely agree with you. I think sports personalities and people in acting and music and like that, they're sort of over celebrated professions.
Yeah, Yeah.
And whereas, you know, as you say, particularly with the times we've had, anyone working within the NHS or you know, that certain emergency services and things like that aren't celebrated enough. You know, we make all the big things about, like, the Oscars and, like, the Mercury Awards or whatever it is.
It's like, I don't really do a lot of podcasts, so I can't be bothered talking about myself. I'm just like, I'm sick of listening about myself. Like, who wants to listen to me? But I totally agree. And whenever people talk about me being this and that, I'm like, well, there's, like, people in everyday our communities that are the people that are really, like, you know, they're just in so much service to other people. Yeah.
Completely agree.
Well, one of the things that be interested to ask as well as a female fighter is we saw an interesting situation arrived with Aspen Ladd and the fight being sort of taken away from her and not being allowed to fight and I guess that come down, you know, she put that, I'm trying to get this question right here, she obviously aligned that to her time of the month and having a big influence on her, and I just wonder, is this discussed enough, like, you know, the extra hurdles to be fight ready for women?
Like, I don't think it is, and I think it's going to take a lot to change because a lot of female fighters brush it under the carpet as well. And they're like, I was on mine as well. It's like, yeah, but it affects people differently. Mm. Their, you know, the weight cut, water retention, just even their moods in camp and fight week and sparring. And it's just definitely something that probably should be talked about a bit more. Yeah. But, I totally agree.
I just thought it felt weird that Misha Tate then come out and kind of rained on her, and I was like, come on, you should surely understand the situation here. And it felt a little
different than it expects. You know, it's like you don't know until you're in that situation. And I did agree. I think that was strange to just throw her under the bus whenever she obviously was down anyway.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, we've had, I think the most important thing you said is, it, like with so many things in the world, it affects people differently. There's women that will be affected completely differently. And Molly McCann, we had on a while back talking about this subject, and she was saying that, you know, she can be physically sick. I mean, that's, and also, she also said that there was something like, you're 80 or 85% more likely to be injured within the first week of your period than you are at any other point. And, like, well, when you think about that, if you're on a 10-week training camp, that's 2 or 3 weeks of training camp that you might not be able to train properly. And we, particularly because I think MMA is still has a predominantly male fan base, we've not discussed this enough and thought about it. I think it is coming more to the forefront of discussions now, which is a really good thing. And it is maybe something that we should consider and think about. And the fact that, like, cycles maybe should kind of line up a bit more, or with dates of fights or opponents or anything like that, just so that there is parity there, and you know, no one's getting extra training and all that kind of stuff. I don't have the brain power to work out how these things would work, but there's definitely something to be said for conversations, at least with top female athletes, to go, we need to look at this a bit more and make sure that everyone's on a level playing field.
Yeah, and I don't have the brain part right this second to figure out or to even think of how to make it more fair for females. It's just kind of one of those things that we're expected to just suck it up and deal with it, because not only that, it's like there's times in the month where you're absolutely starving, like I mean, like crave, and it's like that, if that happens three times, like that week is three weeks in a fight camp, like you're due to, you know, calories, everything, it's just your body needs more energy to function that day. Or my sister has endometriosis, and I have endometriosis that I'm getting looked into at the minute, which is like the most severe pain. Like I can't even describe the pain. It's like we literally can't get out of bed. You're in that much pain, and like deal with that every single month, sometimes more. And it's like there's just so much surrounding it that, you know, and again affects people differently. But you know, I definitely suffer very, very badly from that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this conversations like this that we're having now and the Aspen Lad situation will open that door, and we can have more conversations and more research, and things can be done into it to make things fairer for female athletes.
Yeah.
One thing I also wanted to ask you about was, and we ask everyone about this, is social media. You know, there's so many kind of seems positives and negatives with social media. You can gain followers, sponsorships and money, but also there's a lot of negativity that can come with social media, the trolls and all that kind of thing. How do you deal with social media and balance those two things out?
Like I haven't really experienced that many trolls. Like I don't know. It can be, like say you want to not be on it for 4 weeks, it's like you physically can't, because you have to post sponsors, you have to post training, you have to let people know what you're doing, you have to, you know, keep engaged with your audience so that they want to watch you fight. Because, you know, a lot of big things about getting is opportunities and getting, you know, on big promotions is that people need to be interested in you and interested in your career. And if you just go ghost and don't bother, you know, keeping people up to date, you can become a wee bit like forgotten about. Whereas, it's definitely, I know a lot of people do a lot more than what I do, but I try and keep people as up to date as possible. And it's nice as well. Sometimes when you're in training camps, it can be really lonely, like doing 10 weeks on your own. Like, especially for me, it's like driving to the gym, coming home from the gym, like constantly, you know, you don't go out at weekends, you can't go out for dinner with your family, you can't be around people when they're eating. You know, it's like sometimes to engage with people or let them know what you're up to, it's quite nice as well.
And so in regard, you mentioned training camp. So are you back in the gym now?
I just got back from Texas. I was competing last weekend in America. When did I get? I don't even know what that is. It's Tuesday. So I got back about a week ago. This week I've got like events that I have to attend. And next week I'm in London. My friend Chantelle's fighting in the O2. And the week after that, then I'll be back training, yeah. But I still train, but I'm just not like back in intense camp. I'm just waiting for my fight date. I haven't got anything confirmed yet.
And weren't you in Texas winning a jiu-jitsu tournament?
Yes.
Well, that's amazing. You're just like, yeah, just casually. Like, yes, I was doing that. That's amazing. I mean, I was going to ask you, you've done incredibly well, particularly in the grappling scene as well. You know, you're a judo black belt. You won the IMAFs as well back in 2016. And you've won, I think, have you won two? Like, was it a blue belt and a brown belt? Maybe like jiu-jitsu tournaments now over the years?
Well, The world championships, Nogi. I've won a blue and brown belt.
Yeah.
And I've won a blue and purple belt, the Europeans. I do like to keep busy and just to love competing, because you get nerves, and you have the whole, keeps you sharp, you know, in between tournaments. And I really missed that during the pandemic, because and again, like you get to travel the world and you get to experience so much and meet your friends and people in that kind of circuit. You know, a lot of people just do jiu-jitsu, and I really love the freedom of like just entering and going and giving it a go. Like, I really love that. It's like Texas last week, I just decided like 2 days. I said to myself, like, it would be a dream if I won in London and then wasn't injured and could go out to Texas and compete in the world. And I didn't really have any expectations. I just knew I wanted to try. I wanted to go out and give it a go. And I traveled over to Texas on my own and sat in the bus and cut weight on my own that morning for the tournament and did well. So I was very glad. A lot of people can't get into America, but I had my exemption because the NIE was built. So I was just thought, you know what, like, opportunities aren't ever guaranteed. If there's an opportunity there for me to go and achieve something, like, why not do it? Like, I might not have only done jiu-jitsu. I might not have just focused in this tournament, but with the whole pandemic, like, fights were cancelled, tournaments were cancelled for years, so just go and do it. I felt God opened every door, and he was just telling me to go and do it, because, like, my exemption came through the night before, but, like, I left. It was literally, like, everything was last minute. I just really trusted him and went and did it.
So how many days were between the fight in London, where you won, and then the jiu-jitsu tournament?
It was a week, so it was Friday the 1st. I was competing, in Wembley. And then the next Friday I was in Texas.
That's amazing. So you're just a week, like, you were like, most people would be like, oh my God, I've just had a big fight. Let me go and eat pizza for a few weeks, relax. No, I don't want to cut weight.
You did eat pizza. Yeah.
And then you still cut weight in a bar for a few days later anyway.
Yeah.
Did you regret the pizza while you were cutting weight in the bar?
No. Not
one minute. In regards to sort of, staying active and training regular, I just want to ask you what your approach is to sparring, like, and, you know, and striking. Like, is we have loads of different camps that have different approaches to it. So, you know, some fighters now, we hear Robbie Lawler saying he rarely spars now. I just wonder what your stance is on sparring.
For me, where I am, I can see why Robbie and some guys don't, because they've done so much of it and they have the time down, have the speed down, they've so much experience fighting, they don't need to be sparring every week. Whereas me, where I am in my career, like, I need to be progressing and developing and sparring. It's obviously difficult. I constantly have to spar men, and it's always challenging and a bit demoralising. You're constantly having to spar bigger, stronger, like, men and women, like, are totally different, you know, body types. And but it's definitely a big part of my camps. I spar 2-3 times a week. I try and do as much as I can, but outside of, if I haven't got a fight date, I don't do a lot of it. Like, I maybe once a week, but definitely in fight camp, you know, especially to simulate your opponent and stuff. And it creates a different type of cardio as well, because you're put under that pressure. It's like, you need to feel that, have those hard rounds to get used to dealing with hard rounds in the fight.
100%.
And we had Jojo Calderwood on a while back as well, and she was saying that was one of the reasons that she moved to Syndicate MMA over in Vegas, was she couldn't find enough female training partners, and training with men was different. Do you find it difficult to find training partners that are the female training partners?
Yeah, definitely, especially my my weight class and over here. I don't really have any. I don't actually don't even have one. So I just have to train with the guys. But, and I do travel a lot to train, though. I've been to Thailand. Been out to Dubai in January. Go over to the UK a lot. Like, I do travel a lot to train. But, yeah, it's definitely a big, big problem. I don't know. It's definitely just an issue for females in, like, UK, Europe. But, you know, obviously there's big teams in America. All have a lot of girls.
Yep.
But yeah, just another thing.
So when you come to the UK, Dad being a Scouser, do you get yourself over to Next Gen?
Yes, I've trained there a lot. Paul Rimmer's a brilliant coach. So he's a fantastic mind, and you can see, like, how his team's doing the AFC. He's just for years and years I've travelled over to Liverpool, and it's I love learning from him. Yeah,
wonderful.
Well, I wanted to know, like, we had years ago, like, Rose Namajunas shaved all her hair off to say, you know, I'm not a model, I'm just a fighter, and that's all I want to be treated as. And then recently we've had Paige VanZant come out and say things like, she earns more from, like, a modeling Instagram post and sponsorships than what she did from like her UFC fight contracts. And I was wondering, do you feel any pressure to look good outside of your athletic ability? Like, do you feel like there's any kind of unfair expectations or pressures on you to be judged on your appearance as well as your athletic ability, which is something that obviously men won't really have to deal with the way that women have to deal with it in our sport?
I don't know. I haven't really ever thought about it. I just, I've always kind of been myself. I know that people have made comments that Oli's main event because she's good looking, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, my multiple world titles and my accolades speak differently. You know, people like to, and a lot of people don't like to see other people be doing well, and especially confident women or like women who are sure of themselves in certain you know, areas of life. They don't like to see them owning where they are, and I've seen like just like some salty people, but like it never would ever bother me. Like, I don't, it's like reading in a troll on Twitter, it's like who even would ever, I don't know why people would get annoyed about like trolls and stuff. It's like these totally irrelevant, more than likely unsuccessful people talking about you because they're so unhappy. Like, that's just my view.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great view to have. Just, I think that's great that you've got the kind of strength of mind to just go, that's not important stuff at all.
Yes. Yeah, totally. But then some people just are different. It's, I feel like I have so much drama in my real life, I don't need to listen to them online.
Well, I mean, what's coming up? What, moving forward, Leah, what's the plan?
Literally sitting, like, I have, like, if you look at my notebook, like, I am the most like goal orientated, like, I'm gonna show you it. Like, I'm literally writing the lists of stuff that I need to do. To have like a big fight date or a tournament or something coming up. So I was like, oh my goodness, I have no dates. What am I gonna do? I was like, right, I'm gonna book a week training here, do this. But I'm just gonna, I've got like stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks, and I'm gonna try and torture Bellator to get my next fight date so I have it in my head so I can just think about it. I don't know how I'm gonna like deal with life when I'm not fighting, because I with it, like, I'm gonna have to take up a different hobby or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, what, when it comes to that next fight, that Bellator fight that you're going to be aiming to get, I mean, you're ranked fourth in the world. You've only had 7 fights and you're ranked fourth in Bellator. Surely you're only 1 win away from the Cyborg fight, which is massive. Yeah. I mean, Cyborg's had something like 26 fights. You, if you win your next fight, you would have had 8 fights and you might be in for a title shot. Is that in any way daunting going into a fight where there's that kind of discrepancy when it comes to like experience levels? Or do you welcome that kind of challenge?
I definitely welcome it. I definitely feel like it's inevitable and it's going to happen, like, whenever the timing is right. And I just, like, I always say, I know I was an amateur world champion, and I know it's my destiny to be a professional world champion. I know I will be, you know, world champion. And that's, like, my motivation, like, not money, not anything. Like, it's just to achieve that goal. And I'm literally just take it one fight at a time and see where it leaves me after. And yeah, it's so surreal to be, like, I watched, I think was her fight was one of the first MMA fights I ever watched before I even did MMA. I suppose actually now when I stop and think about it, it's like, it's crazy that not only are we in the same division that we're going to probably fight soon, you know. And I'm so excited for Sinead, like, has been one of my training partners. She's got that opportunity and I'm just so happy for her. I just, you know, and that's next, and I just want to kind of like give her the kind of limelight for a while. Yeah. let her shine, you know. I think she deserves it and she's such a good person, and I'm really excited for her.
And you've mentioned your faith a couple of times on this as well, and when you go through your social media, you're putting up all this positive, lovely stuff about that stems from your faith. And I just wanted to know, is that something you've always had? Is that something your parents instilled in you, or is that something you found later on in life?
No, like my mum and my grandparents, they would all be believers. We've always went to church, and suppose when I was growing up, like, we kind of stopped going for a while, and then after I had Isabella, like, I just wanted to make sure she was going, and was brought up in the same way that we would have been, and given that, you know, opportunity to go to church, and she loves it, and she goes to her Bible club every Wednesday night, and she goes to church with me, and having her definitely brought me closer to God again, and to kind of lean into him for guidance in my life.
One of the other things that we like to ask fighters, you know, during sort of fight camp and stuff like that, is the face-off. Like, do you, we've had fighters say that they look into their eyes and can, you know, can see they're scared, and or we see people that are just completely blasé and don't even make eye contact. Like, what's your sort of thoughts on that kind of final stare, Dan?
I love it. I love it. Do you mean in the weigh-in or at the fight?
Oh, good point. Normally, I'm thinking weigh-in, but yeah, I mean, tell me about the differences then.
I suppose, like, on fight night, it's like I just, like, don't take my eyes off them, and then it's the same in the weigh-in as well. I don't know. I just really like it.
Are you doing that kind of? Can you see if they're scared? Is it something that you can?
I can't see if they're scared. I think I'm just so sure of myself. I don't really care. Yeah.
So is it a case of asserting that with them? Like, look how.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Comfortable and confident I am right now?
Not really for me. I just am really like, I don't know. There's just in a weird zone, weird like mindset. It's hard. It's so hard to describe. So many emotions, so many things about fighting. It's so hard to like vocalize, if you know what I mean.
And do you think there's anything to be sort of taken from, you know, added to that confidence is the army of incredible mixed martial artists that are coming out of Ireland at the moment. Is that something that, you know, you feel super proud to be part of?
Yeah, especially the guys that we've, like, 8 years ago we were all trained together, and that we're still here, still grinding, still, pushing, like, the barriers. And it's just so nice to see everybody excelling and doing well, especially from such a small island.
Lovely. You mentioned pizza earlier. What's your number one post-fight meal?
Like, I always tell people this, like, it has to be McDonald's. And I
really,
I'm not really big. I don't really love, like, their food, but I definitely love McDonald's.
What is it? What are you talking, like, quarter pounder, nuggets?
No,
what are you on about?
No, selects.
Chicken selects. Very niche choice, the chicken selects at McDonald's. I like it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Leah, it's been an absolute joy being able to talk MMA and life and all of that stuff in and around it with you today. So, yeah, absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you, Leah. Cheers. Thanks so much.
No worries. Bye, thank guys.
You. See ya. Well, there you go. Leah McCourt.
Boom. Done.
The curse, Leah McCourt. And that is it. That's, you know, that's a brilliant chat. I think it's just really interesting getting the insights of, again, first mum we've ever had on the podcast.
Absolutely.
A single parent that's, you know, she's on a 6-fight win streak. And I mean, she had her first professional fight was a loss. She's come back from that. She spoke a bit about imposter syndrome as well, and how she's going into fights kind of thinking, oh, I don't know quite how to deal with this. And then her coaches are kind of getting her through it. And I think stories and fighters talking about stuff like that just makes them seem more human and more vulnerable. And I really love that. I like hearing from people that do this amazing sport and put themselves in these extreme fight or flight situations. They're going into it not with some kind of bloodlust. They're going into it going, oh shit, I don't even know if I really know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then she goes out and pulls out all these wins and is, as we said at the start, firing her way up the Bellator rankings. And that's great.
That was what was really interesting. You know, you say 6-1, like 7 fights, ranked 4th, literally potentially a fight away from Cyborg. And you ask many people, do you want to fight Chris Cyborg? And most of them are going to go, no, no, no. And she was like, yeah, welcome it.
Yeah, which
and
is
like,
great.
You know, there takes some serious, you know, focus, mindset and confidence to go, yeah, I want that.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and we were discussing, Cyborg's got like 26 fights, I think it was. Leah's got 7. I mean, so in terms of experience, there's a world of difference there. But, you know, Leah's doing the right thing. She's doing all these tournaments. And the fact that she's winning a fight, her last fight, a co-main event in London on the Michael Venom Page card, she wins that fight. It's not a quick finish. It's a 3-round decision, ground out fight. And then a win.
Says to Bellator before this, can I fight in 6 weeks' time in Ireland?
Yeah. But also, a week later, is in Texas. She flies all the way to Texas. Is cutting weight again to do a jiu-jitsu tournament. I mean, that's real dedication there. And that's
a champion's mentality.
100%, that's a champion's mentality. And you know, we absolutely wish Leah all the best with her journey to hopefully realise that goal and become a professional world champion.
Absolutely. If you like hearing incredible female mixed martial artists talk, then have a look in our back catalogue, because you can hear us talking 2 episodes with friend of the show now, we can call her that, Meatball Molly McCann. You can hear us talk to Jojo Calderwood. You can hear us talk to Angela Hill. Amazing chat of Angela Hill, who, if any of you's heard her commentary on the Cage Warriors San Diego show, Angela Hill, what a commentator as well. Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Who else we had on? Who else we had on?
I mean, on top of that, we've had stars like Alexander Volkanovski, Tyron Woodley, Kenny Florian, Paddy the Baddy. We've had him on twice. Jack Shaw on twice. Paul Craig, Tom Aspinall. Arnold Allen. The list just goes on and on and on. And hopefully we'll be getting some more brilliant interviews. Oh, Dan Hardy! Dan Hardy.
Let's not forget that one. Only come out a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And it's an absolute cracker.
Dan Hardy, Mason Jones, Mark Goddard, John Gooden, UFC commentator John Gooden. And let's not forget the fun fight or flight episodes we've had, where we've got guests in that aren't in any way to do with the MMA world. We give them a fight to watch, and then we have spoken to them about that fight and got their opinions on MMA and their kind of preconceptions of MMA and then what they think it is after the fight. With that, like Emily Head from The Inbetweeners, Laura Checkley from King Gary, Lee Mack, Thomas Turgoose, James Arthur, where we spoke to him about his love of MMA. He's a big super MMA fan. We've had such an array of different people on this show, from celebrities to fighters to commentators, refs, you name it. We've had journalists like Sean Sheehan, brilliant chat with him. And the list goes on. So check out the back catalogue, because as we've said before, other podcasts do a lot of interviews where it's about what's happening now, and what we try to do is really get inside the heads of fighters and guests that we talk to, and talk to them not just about what's going on in their careers at that moment in time, but about their careers in general, the long term, the starts to the finishes if they're retired, of their careers, like people like Brad Pickett we've had on as well, and yeah, so you can check those out, and even if they're a few months old, they'll still resonate with you today. So check, go through, scroll through, and if there's any names that you like that pop up on the list, give it a listen.
And if you don't want to just give it a listen, if you want to look at our beautiful faces and the guests, then you can head over to our new YouTube channel. Well, it's not that new now. It's been going about a month now, but literally there's probably 25 episodes now that you can go and watch. So you can go and see us chatting to all of our guests. And we've mentioned it before, and I'll mention it again. If you ever want to see a shirtless Tyrone Woodley in space driving a car, head over to our YouTube channel.
Absolutely. And hopefully we'll get some, is it 267 coming up soon? We'll get a preview show out to you soon. If it's not out already, we're not sure when this is being released, but I think it'll be soon. And then a post-fight show, hopefully, as well. And we've got a special catch-up episode that should be available for you now as well, where we've discussed all of the kind of interesting moments in MMA over the last few weeks, including some positive things like the great Dan Hooker story that's going on at the moment, the kind of back end of UFC 266.
You love Dan Hooker,
I'm a big... I really want Dan Hooker to reply to a message. I'm going to send him one now and say, Dan, come on the show, and he'll probably never see it. But I do. I'm a big, big Dan Hooker fan, and I think what he's done recently has just really made the MMA community stand up and really take notice and show him some love, because he's shown some big old balls as Dan Hooker by stepping in to fight Islam Makhachev on 4 weeks' notice, which will be coming up very, very soon, which I'm very excited about. And yeah, I can't remember what I was going to say after that. There was some other stuff. Oh, yeah, obviously,
you've gone all funny, ain't you? Yeah.
I've got
all
funny.
Think about Dan Hooker.
Oh God, can you see the love heart emojis in my eyes as I talk about Dan Hooker?
Next week we'll be talking about the court injunction that Dan Hooker took on Blake Harrison.
It's got a restraining order. But yes, so we're talking about that, and obviously there has been some negative news within the MMA sphere of late. We do discuss a little bit of that as well. So check out our catch-up episode to get our thoughts on everything that's going on in MMA over the last few weeks, and then we'll hit you up with the regular pre and post fight shows and other fighter interviews coming your way.
Subscribe now, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.